Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Cale Copeland and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thanks for listening. This is episode number 3 and I am really excited to be speaking with Canadian Olympic legend and champion Dr. Derek Porter on the topic of human well-being and performance. Now, before I introduce him, just a reminder that if you have any questions or you require assistance, you can always reach us here at Victoria Family Chiropractic at 250-592-5553 or online at www.vfchiro.com. That's V as in Victoria, F as in family, C-H-I-R-O.com. So a little bit about Derek. He was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland. His father, Hugh, rode for the United Kingdom at the 1958 Commonwealth Games, winning a bronze medal. Derek began his rowing career in his second year at the University of Victoria. In the 1992 Summer Olympics, he won the gold medal. Woo! In the Canadian Men's Eight. Prior to that, he had rowed in the Canadian Men's Eight at the 1990 and 91 World Championships, finishing second both times. After the 92 Olympics, he took up sculling, which is a slightly different form of rowing. And in 1993, he won the single scull event at the World Rowing Championships and was one of the favorites going into the 1996 Summer Olympics. He led for most of the race, but ended up holding on to win the silver medal. Following that achievement, he was awarded the Order of British Columbia in 1996. After the 96 Olympics, he devoted himself to chiropractic school. And in 2012, he was inducted into the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame. Currently, he is a practicing chiropractor living in Vancouver with his wife Helen and his son Lachlan. For more information, he can be emailed at drderekporter@aim.com. That's drderekporter@aim.com. You can also find him on Facebook under Derek Porter or on his website at drderekporter.com. Champ, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Bill. Exhaustive bio. That was awesome.
I'm really excited for myself and our listeners. I've known you for a little bit. I think you're an awesome guy. I guess I've met you at conferences and whatnot and through the profession. I've always been impressed. You know, you're super humble. You're a giant. You're a gentle guy, but you're also in unbelievable shape. So I've got some great questions for you. You ready?
I'm ready. Right on.
Awesome. Okay, so first one is, I guess, why don't we just start off by talking about you and kind of what led you on this amazing path of health and success?
Great. Yeah, my journey, you touched on a few spots with the rowing and the chiropractic, which are big shapers of my life in the last 20 years, I guess. I always wanted to be an Olympic athlete, essentially, from that side of my athletic world. Never knew what it was going to be in, but I was always like a sporty kid growing up in Victoria, BC, but never quite found that one sport that was really going to get me, to the Olympics. And then I went to UVic and just started rowing at the novice level there and thought, man, this is a cool sport. I want to pursue this, and it was a really great environment at UVic right now. At the time, back then, the national team were training there for the 88 Olympics, so they were all kind of training in the same lake, and I looked at them rowing by as I was a novice learning how to row, and they'd be gliding by, and I thought, man, this is super cool. So I just basically started there, and yeah, as you said, it kind of progressed through with nationals and internationals, and I set my sights on the Olympics, and then I was fortunate to row in 92 with a bunch of awesome guys kind of older than me at the time, and so we rode in the 8, won the gold in Barcelona, as you said, and then a lot of those guys retired. Ended up having to kind of refocus a little bit and decide what I wanted to do. Still loved rowing, so I switched to the single, like you said, and picked up a slightly different discipline, as in the singles 2 oars instead of 1, so it's called sculling instead of sweep rowing. And did that for the sort of next 8 years, and then kind of intermingled that with my chiropractic training, like you said, and that's a big part of my life now. So that's cool. Kind of the background, yeah.
That's really neat. I mean, I guess one thing I heard you say there I thought was really interesting is it sounds like you had this kind of drive, even when you were young. Like was that something that was internal, or was your dad, obviously your dad was a really good athlete, was that something that he sort of instilled in you, or was it you always just said, I want to be like my dad and be a champion, or how did that come to be?
Interesting. I mean, I think about that a lot, and how, you know, it's always interesting to see how you are shaped when you look back on your life and what drives you and what doesn't drive you as a kid and then later into adulthood. And I don't know, I was always, you know, always loved sport. I was always fairly, you know, talented at it, you know, and loved playing virtually everything. My dad was definitely a quiet motivator. He was not a rah-rah, you know, push me into anything. They were both, my parents are both, they're active people, not overly athletic in their later years as I was growing up, but encouraged me big time. Like, they always gave me opportunities to do whatever I wanted sport-wise. And, you know, when you're a kid, you start things and stop things and quit. And
yeah,
they were always very supportive. You know, I think, okay, I want to play this now, and I want to play tennis and golf. So I did lots of things, and they were always quietly supportive, but never really pushed. And honestly, I barely knew he was a high-level rower back in Ireland back in the day. He was very humble about that stuff. And, you know, I remember growing up having a few little trophies on the mantle when I was a kid, of my dad's trophies back in the day, little silver goblets, little wooden oars and stuff, that he had won. But then kind of went into the box and to the basement when I was probably a teenager, so I never really saw them after that. But that was the only time he really talked or mentioned anything about the rowing thing. So I definitely wasn't pushed into that sport or any other for that matter. But like I said, when I found rowing, I really feel like, and it's interesting in life, I think when you find these niche things that you kind of want to run with, it was like that for rowing for me. The minute I picked it up, basically, it was the sport for me, you know, and it's just a matter of finding. Had a right body type for and the right mentality, and every sport's a bit different that way, which is interesting in itself, right? Certain sports demand different attributes, and I think I sort of had what it took to be a rower, and that was fortunate that I stumbled on it. It took me 19 years to do it, but started late, but I finally found that, so I think that was a big part of it.
That's amazing. I mean, what a cool, yeah, because that'll get into, I want to expand on that a little bit later on, but that's super cool, and it'll be neat for you, because I know you've got your little guy, I guess, is 5 years old now, and so it'll, you know, I imagine he'll maybe play some sports, or at least you'll have the opportunity. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, yeah, definitely. As a parent, you just want to give your kid opportunities, right? So I might guide him gently, but I definitely didn't get a lot of pushing when I was a kid. That's probably the best way to do it, right?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I'm gonna take that to heart. My son's a hockey player, and I'm just trying to let him do his thing. But okay, well, obviously, life's changed a lot since you were in the Olympics. I mean, you got a boy who's in kindergarten in a week, you know, you're married, you have a practice. You know, I guess my question is, that's a lot to juggle, and yet when I see you, I mean, you look like you could win a medal now. You know, like, I know it's a big question, but how is that? Like, what enables you to be like that or to do that?
Well, you, Kale, you're a good, fit-looking guy too, I gotta say. So,
thanks.
Back at you on that, but thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's always been fitness has been a big part of my lifestyle. I think I can't really imagine myself not, you know, being fairly active, obviously not to the level of training 3-4 times a day, which I used to do back in the day. Then it was more like, you know, once a day, that I was thinking, I can't imagine not working out every day. And then, of course, you get busy with family and practice, and it's like, well, maybe I could do 2 or 3 this week.
Yeah.
So I've definitely fallen down a little bit, but, you know, I get back on track usually, and so, yeah, I just, you know, I did a few triathlons, just fun things to keep myself mildly motivated. I like to have some kind of mini goal to kind of shoot for, a little race to play, or 10K run or something, nothing terribly competitive. But, you know, a big part of it is just diet, lifestyle, that stuff. I'm really big into eating healthy. I think that's a huge part of it, obviously, too, keeping yourself moving, but also not overeating and eating healthy food so you stay fairly trim, all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I feel great. You know, I'm close to 50 now.
Are you
definitely
close?
Won't
wow.
be making the national team anytime soon. But in my 40s, early 40s, I was like, yeah, I could probably still come back and do that if I wanted to. But now it's like, yeah, I don't think so.
That's funny.
But it's a lifelong journey to stay healthy. It's not something I consider to be very difficult to do in the sense that it's part of my essence, as it were. So I pursue that, and my interest area in terms of reading and everything is always around health and nutrition. So it just becomes your life, really.
That's awesome. You know, I heard you say one thing there, and I do want to just kind of go into that a little bit. I heard you say, like, having a goal, like, hey, I want to run a 10K. Now, just a question, like, when you say, is that just like a loose goal? Like, hey, I'd like to run a 10K one day. Or is it more like, is there more structure to it? Like, you say, I want to run a 10K and I want to do it on this date and I want to run it in under an hour. Like, is it more detailed, or how does that look to you?
I mean, now it changes a little bit as time goes on, I guess, but I do, it's relatively structured. I wouldn't say my training up to that point is overly intensive, but you know, I've got a decent base from the sports that I just do just for fun, so
for
I can,
sure,
you know, ramp it up a little bit for a month or two and probably enter most races and just do them. But at the same time, I don't really love to go and do a race without being relatively fit, you know, and not at my peak necessarily, but I don't want to be an embarrassment out there. I just do it for the sake of doing it. I'd rather not pay the entry fee and just go and go for a run or go for a ride if I'm not going to be somewhat competitive. So
yeah, no,
so I might do a Fondo, the kind of thing, a cycling event, you know, 120, 160K, that kind of stuff. But I'll train, do some hills, and get comfortable enough that I'm not going to be a total embarrassment. And quite frankly, not be quite as painful doing it. So, you know, just to get prepared enough. But yeah, I might target a 10K run or something just locally a few months out and do that. And then I'll be able to run for a while with a bit of a goal. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's... you know, I got to achieve a certain time necessarily, but they're always in the back of my head. You want to kind of be, oh, I remember doing this in this time, and maybe I'll shoot for something in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. But it's relative, obviously, now. But a lot of things, if I can't do them at a high, high level, I might just avoid them a little bit. That's just the way I am.
That's funny. Yeah, I guess you don't want some, like, grandma passing you on some run, and she's like, I was passing Derek Porter. He's the Olympian, and I kicked his butt. So, yeah, you got to have some level of fitness. That's hilarious. Well,
I know.
You know,
save face a little bit, but yeah.
Maybe we'll get back to that in a bit. I guess now I want to kind of go back in time. Let's go back to like your kind of peak performance days, and this is the part I'm super amazed by. I mean, you must have had, there must have been a fair amount of pressure, not only like physically, like as you're training so much, but emotionally too, especially leading up to 96 when, like, I'm sure you were getting interviewed and, you know, you're the favorite to win the race. Like, I guess here's my question, like, under those kind of circumstances, when you have that much strain and yet literally you're finding a way to, like, not only thrive, but be literally like the best in the world. How is that?
Well, that's, yeah, I guess that's the mental game, I suppose, what you're kind of alluding to, or being able to hold everything together under ultimate duress, physically speaking and mentally, I guess. But
I guess the mental game, I guess there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, you had to be physically ridiculously fit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the training regimen is, I mean, high-level sports, interesting thing. I mean, I do think a lot of people, you know, that don't do it could do it, but don't for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, they don't want to train at that level or would devote entire life or decade to one thing, or, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. Some people don't have the raw talent, and some people do and don't want to pursue it. So it's interesting, right? We all went to school with that kid with, you know, tons of raw talent, maybe run track or whatever, but never went elite or high level or national team because it didn't want to, right? It wasn't their thing, right? So, but they were, you know, could have, definitely had the talent to do it. So I think you have to have all those little bits. I kind of consider it kind of like a machine almost. You have to have all your little cogs of the clock, so to speak, or the machine in line to really take it to that level. And you've got to want to do it, obviously, and then have the resources to be able to do it, and, you know, be in the right environment to have it, and the right coaches. So there are a lot of moving parts to that whole scenario, aside from what you can control as an athlete. But you know, some people are kind of wired that way and want to spend ridiculous amounts of time on one thing and get great at it. And I always think of the guy from Chouinard, from Patagonia, the company, Yves Chouinard, who founded Patagonia. And he, I remember his quote in one of his biographies. Basically, his take on that was he loved getting to, you know, like 80% competence in a certain activity or sport, but didn't really care about that extra 20 to get great at it.
Hmm.
You know, he'd always, Yves Chouinard, the Patagonia guy. So he always thought, yeah, I'd rather just be fairly good at a whole bunch of things and lifestyle type sports and not necessarily be the best of the best of the best and want to devote that extra amount of, you know, 10 years to get 2% better, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah,
and
no, I hear you.
That's the kind of person you have to be. And for me, I liked that as opposed to being more of a, say, jack of all trades and being good at some things. I just gravitated towards that and made that a goal for myself. But by no means do I think that's right for everybody. It's definitely not.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're training three, four times a day, 6 days a week. It's a lifestyle. It's definitely, you know, it's grueling timing, but looking back on it, you're young and stupid, as I say. Maybe you don't know any better, but everyone around you is doing the same thing too, which is a bit of a cultural thing, which I think if you're doing that in isolation, it would be very difficult. But, you know, all my peers at that time were rowers and for different boats and different teams within Canada, but they're all kind of striving for the same thing. They're all motivated, so it became kind of like your norm, right? This is my my peer group was all doing the same thing, so it wasn't really abnormal, right?
Like it was just your life.
Outside that group, it looks abnormal from the outside in, but I mean, when you're in it, it's kind of like, well, this is what we're all doing, the same thing. It's not really weird, right? So,
isn't
but yeah,
neat?
there's the stress of actually, you know, competing and that kind of thing, which is a bit different. But I would say I love training and pushing myself to that level. But the, you know, the racing is and was stressful, definitely.
Going into 96, you must have been aware that you were the favorite. Was that something that you thrived on and you were like that you found propelled you? Or was that a stress for you? And if it was, how did you sort of cope with that?
It was not, I would say, it's a good question. I would say it's not, and I hear amateur athletes say this all the time, is like, you know, it's not really a negative stress. It is stressful, but for the most part, you put a lot of stress on yourself, which is totally true. It's a bit cliche, but I would say the stress I put on myself is more than the stress I feel externally or this extrinsic stress from other people wanting me to get to a certain result. It's more like I know I'm capable of doing this, and if I let myself down, if I don't have a great race, that's much more of a big issue for me, I would say, than the external. Like, people are very supportive in general, right? I mean, the rest of Canada, when you're at the Olympics and you don't do well, you know, you get pretty much a lot of supportive feedback from people. I'm sure some people aren't, but you don't hear from them necessarily, but you know, most people are just like, wow, it's amazing you got there. You know, most people aren't, fourth in the world is pretty good. You know, I'm like, well, fourth kind of, it wasn't that good for me because I wanted to medal, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes this very narrow focal goal. And it's, there's disappointment within that, obviously, when you don't achieve what you want to achieve and what you know you can or are capable of achieving. It's one thing coming fourth when you're predicted to come 10th. It's another thing when you were supposed to win and you come fourth or fifth, right? So from an athlete's perspective, nobody wants to do that, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
well, it was interesting. Like, I heard you say there that, you know, you could have looked at that scenario in so many different ways and thought, I have the whole pressure of a nation on me, and yet it didn't sound like you took it that way. You still pretty much internalized it. And that's probably one of the reasons why you were so successful and why you're a champion and a gold medalist. But isn't that neat? I'm interesting to hear that. You know, listen, I mean, obviously, most people aren't training to win gold medals. I mean, like you're saying, people are doing 5Ks and 10Ks, maybe a triathlon or a Tough Mudder or some sort of obstacle Spartan race. You know, are there tips that you could give people, just average kind of weekend warriors, that you think would help them be more successful or maybe prevent injuries?
Obviously, yeah, for sure. There are lots of things one can do, and some of them are obviously more obvious than others, I would say, but I mean, I would say you've got to have a structured plan would be probably the number one thing in terms of just the dynamics of trying to achieve a certain goal, whatever that may be, whether it's your first marathon or first 10K or Tough Mudder, like you say, all these things. So, I mean, obviously some preparation is probably good to enjoy the experience and be at a level where you can actually, you know, not be in total discomfort the whole campaign afterwards. So, you know, it's got to be fun. So preparation is good, obviously. I mean, there are so many little cogs, like I said, to that whole machine, whether it's, you know, eating healthily and hydrating properly, coaching if needs be. But, you know, I think for the average person, you just want to have a good experience and, you know, be around people. Maybe it's joining a running group or something where you've got some structure and you've got some motivation and you've got some accountability and people, you know, depending on you being there to train with, all that stuff I'd say is pretty important, unless you're a total lone wolf and love doing it on your own, which some people are like that too.
Yeah.
But I think for most people, it's nice to have a group around you doing the same thing. So, I mean, that would probably be the number one thing.
Okay.
If I had to pick one thing. And then there's all the physical elements, of course, of training and diet and eating properly if you want to get to a higher level, and just creating the machine, so to speak. I know I keep saying machine, but the body is much more than that. I appreciate that. But all the little cogs you can take care of, whether it's nutritional and rest and recovery and all those things, right, play a role. But I think being part of a community is a big reason why people do it in the first place, right? They want to kind of go and achieve something big and be around other people that are doing the same thing, which is very motivating in any part of life, really, right?
Yeah, that's cool. That's a neat way of putting it. Yeah, so basically get a clan or get involved in the lifestyle, have a plan and prepare, and that's going to make you more likely to enjoy the experience. That's awesome. Okay, I wanted to get a little bit into the whole idea of kind of mental health, I suppose, and I'm sure... you know, were there strategies or techniques that you used that, or was it just inherent to you? Or there are things that you do to keep your mind and your emotions as strong or stronger than your body?
as an athlete, like Olympic athlete? Well, I guess that part of my life, even in general, yeah.
I think in general, or for sure, when you were an athlete, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, interestingly, there are obviously resources out there for athletes to overcome, whether it's sports psychologists and overcoming, whether it's fear or performance anxiety or overcoming some barrier or plateau, all these things that can be very mental, obviously.
Yeah.
Rowing or amateur sport in general, I can probably say, but, you know, underfunded sports in, you know, in Canada, it's not easy in terms of we don't have a lot of resources that way.
Yeah.
So I know people always ask me, you know, you must have had, you know, the best nutritionists and the best sports psychologists and, you know, at your beck and call whenever you need them. I was like, no, it doesn't actually work that way, or at least it certainly didn't. I think maybe a bit better now, but it's still, it's, you know, it's a tough row for most people in that regard. Definitely rowing is not a high profile sport, right? So you don't have the big resources. There's not the big money involved in some sports where the machine is quite big in terms of like cycling or, you know, NFL team or something. Those big teams, obviously they've got more money and resources at their disposal. So unfortunately, in Canada anyway, I find a lot of athletes just don't make it to that upper level because they might have some either a mental hurdle or something they can't quite figure out on their own, and rather than getting help with that, they either, you know, can't verbalize it or figure it out exactly, or don't have the resources to actually correct it. So, you know, in my world, there were, you know, some people did see a sports psychologist, but they'd have to basically go out on their own, find somebody, pay for it on their own, all that stuff. So it wasn't like a resource that we had at our fingertips at all.
Yeah.
And which is unfortunate, because I'm sure there were athletes that sort of had the talent, but, you know, had this one little hitch they needed to overcome, and it could have been quite overcomable, but just didn't have the resource to do it. I mean, luckily, I didn't find that so much, so it's almost like, you know, you can make it work if you have all the tools, and if you don't, you just kind of disappear, right? You just don't perform well in training, and the coach says, well, you're not good enough, and you just disappear. And if there's not the resources there to tackle those issues, you just don't make it to that level, unfortunately. And I'm sure there are a lot of athletes in that boat. I know some definitely that in rowing that came out with lots of talent, but just didn't have the necessary resources to get to that next level.
Yeah, that's a fascinating, like, it's interesting. You wonder, is it, you know, was it that they didn't have that inherent drive to overcome the obstacle, or was it, like you said, you know, they didn't have the tools? You know, like, have you had experience with coaches that have said to you, like, for instance, you hear of visualization or meditation, or, you know, there's you know, or maybe it's focusing on things you're grateful for as opposed to problems. Like, was that ever something that was talked about with you guys, or anything that you even used consciously or subconsciously?
I would say no would be the short answer to your question. In terms of generally not. I mean, anything I knew about that stuff, I garnered through my studies. You know, at UVic, I did my applied kinesiology degree there. So you have sports psychology as part of your curriculum, right?
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I mean,
yeah.
I kind of knew about dissociative techniques, and dissociative techniques is basics psychology, right? So I mean, I'm familiar with the terms, but I would say unless you use them naturally, as in you probably don't even know you're using them, as a person or an athlete, and you don't have the structure of someone telling you that you can do or should do these things, then you probably won't be doing them, right? So in our case, our coaches that I had were pretty much, I would say, you know, he's a great coach, Mike Spracklin, our main coach that was part of most of my success. Amazing, successful coach in various countries, but very old school, right? He was pretty hardcore. He wasn't big into sports psychology. He wasn't big into sports physiology, like the testing stuff. He's basically, you know, this is great for you guys to garner this information, as in the sports physiologist.
Yeah.
Doing blood lactate levels and all these things on us. Like, you're sort of like a guinea pig, but in terms of garnering information that we can actually use usefully for training, he wasn't really big into utilizing that data, which, you know, right or wrong, I mean, definitely valuable stuff to be had from that stuff.
Yeah.
We were not a big part of that, only because the coach was not really a big part of that. So he was pretty old school. It's like you put in the miles. If you can't put in the miles and you break down, you're probably not cut out for this sport, was kind of the bottom line.
Isn't that interesting?
Which, like I said, is kind of sad. So, you know, the cream kind of rises to the top. If you got it, you got it. If you don't, unfortunately, well, maybe you're just not cut out for the sport, is what he would say.
Huh.
Unfortunately, yeah. So, but there are definitely other sports and coaches and administrators that don't feel that way or have more resources than we had. But I think it is a problem in Canadian sport. Definitely in my era, it was. And they're just the resources for nutrition.
Yeah, just resources and that kind of old school
approach.
Unless
you had your own or could get them on your own, you didn't have them. Yeah.
Huh. Isn't that funny? Well, I mean, here's a different question I have for you, and I'm just interested to hear your take on it. Like, obviously, and this, we've sort of been talking about this already, you know, not many people are going to ever achieve the level of success that you did in terms of athletics. And I guess the question is, like, do you feel that this is, like, genes? Is it God-given ability? Was it just raw desire? Like, what is it that you think that made you different?
I mean, I guess yes in answer to all those options.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's any one thing. Like, you know, most things in life are not one thing. It's not that black and white generally for most things. So, I mean, I honestly think it is definitely a lot of things. I don't think genes are that huge an attribute apart from your size and your height, that kind of thing. But I don't think they play a huge role in the like mental aspects per se. And in this particular, I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not a sports psychologist or psychologist. But, you know, it's definitely the type of body you need for certain sports is going to be different, right? Do you want either tall or short basketball? You know, you're unlikely to be a great basketball player if you're 5 feet tall. Unlikely to be a great rower if you're 5 feet tall, you know, and we're all sort of tall guys. So you've got to obviously have those basics down. And then you've got this physiology of being able to process lactic acid quickly and recover quickly, not feel the burn as quickly as other people, which is huge, obviously. And then you've got the mental aspects of pushing your body. So, I mean, all these things have to be there. And then you also have to have the outside, like I said, the coaches and whatnot to support you and guide your crew or you to success. Like, nobody does that alone either. So, you know, there's no one thing. I do think it's everything, and I always looked at it like it was everything when I was training. It's like, okay, what other piece of this puzzle do I need to get to this next level, or am I lacking in certain areas, whether it's strength or cardio or nutritional stuff? And
see,
I would just kind of figure it out and just work on all those things. And it was by no means perfect looking back on it, but it was a progression of, you know, 12 years I rode in the national team. So when I first started, you know, I was not good. I was going to 7-Eleven and drinking super big gulps between rows to hydrate, right? that was our sports nutrition, right? More calories the better, like literally. And,
wow.
You know, we did need a lot of calories. So, you know, it was definitely not this high performance. Everything I put in my body is great. But then as I got more mature as an athlete and learn more through school, I started to realize how important these little things are, and no one of them is going to be huge necessarily, but all of them in concert will create a better performance and a better performing athlete, and you got fewer injuries and better recovery. And that's the sort of stuff I started to notice relative to my peers, is the more stuff I did, and they thought, I'm not doing that job, to be honest with you. Like, I'd be, you know, don't eat margarine, what are you doing? Like, you know, eat real food and potato chips, what are you doing eating that stuff? So, but that was me as a later athlete when I was younger, growing up through that cycle. I wasn't as vigilant with that stuff, but part of that's just knowledge and part of that's knowing. And like I said, we didn't have the resources telling us we should or shouldn't do this, so we're just like, well, 8,000 calories a day minimum. So
wow,
we're gonna have to eat some pasta and sugar, right? So that's sort of the way I looked at it initially. But then of course it got much more refined as time went on, and now I'm way more vigilant now about my food than I ever was as an athlete. So it just kind of kept on going throughout life.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, what I hear from what you're saying, I mean, is obviously you were very much looking for that edge and how do I improve? So obviously a lot of this was just drive, and the fact that you were willing to, you know, do things, whatever was necessary in your opinion to get better. Mm-hmm. So that's really neat.
Yeah. And I mean, everyone at that level is pretty gifted, right? I mean, so I'm not denigrating the genetic side of things and the predispositions. There is definitely that aspect. But I think at that point, when you've got to that level, everyone has much got that stuff going on, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't have got that far.
Yeah, when we're talking like 1 second can separate 4 medals, I mean, it's like it's so small, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, so like, what are the differences? I mean, that really comes down to on the day, this snapshot of you at the Olympics is, you know, this is one day out of whatever 4 years you've been training for this moment, and you know that can be washed away with a bad sleep or you know, a bit of a stomach bug or whatever, right? And you've lost 2% of your performance, which you've basically spent the last 4 years trying to get that 2%, and you know that's the tragedy and the beauty of the Olympics, right? It's, if it's on, it's great. If it's not, you just miss that window, or you time it incorrectly with your training cycles. Who knows, right? So there's lots of variables, which makes it all the sweeter when it works out, but at the same time, it's pretty devastating when you could shoot that all with, you know, one bad sleep or interrupted something or other. So it's,
isn't that amazing?
That's the beauty of sport, right?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Well, listen, let's switch speeds a little bit. Like, I mean, you know, especially with you being a chiropractor in your history, like, do you have any core beliefs about health? I mean, I know that's a weird question, but like, are there some things that, that you may think about health that are different from, say, the average person?
The average person, I mean, yes, I guess for the average, if you look at the average person's lifestyle, I guess, obviously, I'm not living that lifestyle, not to be judgmental about it, but people, you know, varying degrees of health and fitness, and they, you know, people care about certain things, and they don't think certain things are important. So, I mean, I would say I'm very vigilant about food is probably the biggest thing, and my wife thinks I'm a bit of a nut because I'm, you know, that's basically all I read is stuff online and medical journals, papers, whatever it is. That's just where I'm interested in. So, I mean, food thing is pretty huge, I think, and it's a bit undervalued in society in general, and that we're going to a very, you know, convenience-oriented, not necessarily the healthiest food, and it's, you know, it's just it's difficult because people are busy. I get it, but that's probably the biggest area of life that I'm focused on from a health and wellness perspective, apart from, you know, just keeping moving and working out, is making sure everything I put in my body is producing healthy cells, essentially, right, at the cellular level.
Okay.
Which looks like real food, essentially, right? It's almost like getting back to where we were probably 50 years ago when, you know, there wasn't mass agriculture and, you know, corn and soy and every product we eat and food everywhere. So, you know, I avoid pretty much all of that. So, which most people don't do. So I guess that would be one thing that I would say I do differently than most people.
Yeah, for sure.
And there are people that are more vigilant than I am about that stuff. So I'm not you know, it's a work in progress for me too. And like I said, it's been a refining process since I was in, you know, university probably when that started.
Isn't that interesting? Because, I mean, because there's a lot that goes into what you just said there. You know, you're right. I think that, you know, yeah, we're all, I mean, It takes a lot of energy, I think, and maybe you have done this. Maybe you have gotten your life to a point where you have enough time to be able to be conscious of what you put in your body and even prepare your food, because I think so much of what happens in our lifestyles is we're so busy that, you know, maybe we just don't have the time to prepare or shop, you know, and then boom, you're stuck getting whatever you get.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it can be more expensive if you're, you know, if you're trying to get it conveniently as well, as healthy food, so yeah, it is difficult, and you've got mouths to feed, you've got kids, and you've got work, and you've got sleep, so, you know, but you can orchestrate it such that, you know, you're making these choices, you know, as healthy as you can, too. I'm not Mr. 100% on this stuff either, you know, there's the 80-20 kind of rule, as they say in most things. If 80% of the time you're eating totally healthily, you know, you can afford to have the odd meal that's not less than perfect, let's say. And I definitely do that, or eat at a restaurant or something. That's, you know, I don't know where this food comes from, right? So
yeah,
there's definitely that. But I might say the vast majority of time, I am pretty conscious about what I eat and healthy about what I eat.
But that sounds like that's a healthy principle, right? Is instead of being obsessive about it, you're right. Yeah, you can go to a restaurant and go, hey, you know what? This maybe isn't coming from the best sources, but you know, and that gives you that kind of leeway to kind of, you know, that helps, right?
Right.
Well, that's good.
How much would that damage me? Like, you know, if you wanted to be a high-level functioning human as an Olympic-level human being in life, then, you know, you probably wouldn't have those lapses, right?
Right.
You would control every single thing you ate at home, and you would provide it all yourself or grow it yourself, and you wouldn't have too many lapses. So, I mean, this is the general, I think, was a reality of life, and then there's a reality of high performance, and they're not always the same thing.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that's good for all of us, because, you know, 99.99% of us aren't, you know, going for gold medals, and there's just that, you know, how much should we be doing, and at what point does it become maybe negative? And that's a good rule to follow, that 80-20 rule. So that's awesome. Oh man, I've got more questions, but we're getting close to being out of time. I guess couple more things here. How about, I mean, exercise is a huge one, and there's so many, I don't want to say fads, but there's like this heart rate, there's Tabata, there's CrossFit, there's, you know, do you have any specifics or techniques or methods that you might recommend to our listeners that you believe in or you practice in terms of activity levels?
Yeah, I mean, movement in general is awesome. So I don't like to, as a chiropractor, my patients are asking me about this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, generally of the mind that, you know, if you're out there moving and doing something that you enjoy doing, which is key, right? You got to enjoy doing it. Then that's good, right? We'll keep you in good shape. There are certain things that might be more injury prone than, you know, if you're, say, running lots of miles and your body's not necessarily suited to running lots of miles, those are things. And I might be like, you know, let's take it down or take more rest days or run on trails instead of pavement, all that kind of stuff. But for your elite level runners, you know, they're notorious for running through pain, and that's why they're always injured, right? I mean,
yeah.
Runners are notoriously injured because it's a hard sport on the body, and they're doing a lot of miles, and they're not necessarily getting a lot of rest in between those miles, and that goes for any sport, but I think running's almost worse. It's just so repetitive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you said, there are CrossFits, there's all kinds of things, and some people are suited for that. Some people are suited to be vegetarian, and some are not, in my opinion. So it's kind of like some bodies are great at that, some minds are great at that. Is CrossFit for everybody? No. Is it great for some? Absolutely, right? So, I mean, it's getting out there, moving your body in positive ways, which, you know, I think most people don't need to go that hardcore in general, right?
Yeah, I hear what you're
saying.
They just
need to get out and do something, right? A lot of people just don't have the energy at the end of the day, and they don't do it in the morning, so the day goes by and they don't do anything, and they're sitting at a desk all day. And that's what we really have to avoid. And there's a large sector of the population who are basically getting up out of bed, eating breakfast, sitting in their car, sitting at work, sitting in their car, coming home, sitting at the dinner table, watching TV for 2 hours and going to bed.
Yikes.
That's a recipe for disaster, right,
if
I ever did hear it, right? So, I mean, and unfortunately, that's not that uncommon. So, I mean, for those people that are doing that, then any kind of movement is good. Like, get up and do a half-hour walk outside instead of watching TV after dinner, something like that, right? For that, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then if you get obsessed with something or give yourself a goal and want to train or do more than that, great. But I mean, fundamentally, we just need to do some walking and get out there for most people, right? And then, like I said, if you want to take it to the high level and get really fit at something, then you've got to find out what works best for you. And obviously, it's a multifactorial thing with, you know, CrossFitters are going to have injuries if, you know, they're not working on their flexibility and they're doing these Olympic lifts that are quite technical. So, you know, there's always that kind of stuff, too. I'm not down on that at all, but, you know, there are injury potentials to all these sports.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of work the recovery and work the flexibility so you're able to actually do these things without injuring yourself.
Well, I heard a couple things there that came out of what you just said. It was kind of everyone's different, and, you know, certain activities may not be suited best to people. So I think even when you were talking about your progression in rowing over the years, that things change and you learn about your body and what your body likes, but also the importance, I heard you say, of rest and just movement. So those are great. You know, I guess, Derek, just as we're closing out here, any closing remarks?
Not really. We've covered a lot of interesting
subjects. Yeah.
We could delve pretty deep into any one of these, so it's always interesting. And, sort of my path to this point is interesting from, like you said, a high-level performing to low-level performing, which I call myself now, and then being a chiropractor, so I'm constantly interfacing with people who have these health goals as well. So, you know, it's an interesting perspective for me to kind of take it back a step and realize that, you know, the high-intensity stuff is not everything. It's great for a certain phase of your life, and then really we just have to be kind of smart about looking after ourselves into old age if we want to be functionally healthy and everything else, right? I still think we've got to look after these small little cogs and be cognizant of these things so we're building, you know, the best body we can going forward, because, you know, nobody wants to spend their dying days in hospital.
And
you want to be vibrant and youthful when you're 70s, 80s, 90s, and there's no reason why we can't be. So, but we do have to take some definite measures when we're younger to make that happen down the road.
100%. Well, listen, I've got one little kind of, this is my guilty pleasure question, and I want you to be totally 100% honest here. Do you feel, I mean, both of us probably have agendas here, but I would like to step outside of that. During your, well, I guess as a chiropractor, but even as an athlete, did you feel that chiropractic impacted your performance at all?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I've not talked about much about chiropractic just because it's my life and your life, and I don't want to be, you know, 100% like self-serving on that front. But
yeah,
I mean,
no, for sure. Same here.
I 100% became a chiropractor through rowing. Like 100%, I would not. I could safely say I would not have won medals at the Olympics without chiropractic care.
Wow.
Like, I just wouldn't have. It's that powerful. I mean, it's the thing that ties all this stuff together that we've been talking about, right?
Well, you know,
and think about chiropractic as, you know, back pain, neck pain. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking really about the performance enhancing aspects of chiropractic, which is really the integrity of the nervous system and making sure all these systems are working properly.
Oh, that's awesome. So, I'm pumped to hear that. I mean, that was my guilty little question. Okay, well, listen, hey, Derek, thank you so much. I mean, you're a chiropractor. Are you even taking new patients anymore?
Always, yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure.
And now we're
here in Kitsilano in Vancouver. So I'm Kitsvancouver, yeah, 2919 West 4th. Chiropractic is my office here in Kitsilano in Vancouver.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's always, you know, it's people coming, people going. So I'm always open to new patients. And if people have questions, they can always call me too.
Well, if I was in Vancouver, I'd come see you. How's that? So listen, hey, Derek, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been wonderful. We're out of time. To all our listeners, if you can think of anyone who might benefit from this and what we've talked about, please share the podcast with them. Hey, Derek Champion, thanks again to all our listeners. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks for the next edition of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfchiro.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.